for our minis. We have three main minis today. First, Flame is going to climb on her soapbox and tell you about age in fandom. Next up, we have Life of an Event, where we're going to tell you a little bit more about how the Stokone Summer Stocking is coming along. Last but not least, I put on my Grammar Mustelid hat, and we're going to be talking about semicolons. Then we'll finish it out with a Steve Tony Games update and your events forecast. Take it away, Flame.
Over the last few months, there has been a renewed discussion about if there's an age barrier to fandom. Like, if at some point we should all be expected to close our AO3 accounts and disable our Tumblrs and get on with the business of being an adult. The answer is, of course, in short, absolutely fucking not. But I want to address why these issues keep coming up. We're doing an episode later in the season on age and fandom, where we'll get into the different experiences of people at different chronological ages. But today I want to talk about the pernicious belief among some that there's an age line around fandom, like the one around the Tri-Wizard Cup, and that you must be a certain age to participate or else. There are both internal and external fandom forces attempting to police participation. We're going to get to the external ones in a minute, but first I want to talk about the internal ones within fandom. On Twitter, we see people telling women to go back and take care of their children instead of writing Stucky stories. On Tumblr, we see youths, because friends, and the nature of this discussion is that the antagonizers are frequently youths, saying that it is quote unquote creepy for adult women to write fanfic or make fan art. Over the summer, there was in fact a specific incident where a group of Twitter users targeted a fairly well-known Stucky artist and author and harassed her for days to try to get her to leave the fandom because of her age. Externally, outside of fandom, this policing comes into play when many of us feel uncomfortable telling people about our fandom participation. It comes in author notes I see on AO3 where someone says their partner or spouse doesn't approve of this hobby, and so they're writing on bathroom breaks at work. There may be a thousand of other reasons why we're embarrassed about fandom, but there is one cultural baseline specifically at play that I would like to address right now, and it is namely that women are seen by society as primarily useful and are not allowed to have leisure time or pursue fun on their own. In this conversation, just like in past ones about the sociological foundations of the planet, women in this means anyone who is a woman, regardless of reproductive organs. And so the extent to which the patriarchy interacts with women and people's womanhood may shift depending on those things. But in this conversation, I'm talking about women as a whole. Fandom, you see, it's indulgent. It serves no purpose towards women's primary roles of caretaking, nurturing, etc. And it's not me saying that these things are our primary roles. It's the patriarchy. For, yes, friends, the patriarchy has ruined the party again. The patriarchy is the systemic prioritization of men, usually white men, but not always, and their needs, priorities, and desires. If men are human beings, women are human givers. That's not my specific phrasing. Philosopher Kate Mann coined that idea. And I'm going to quote here from Emily and Amelia Nagoski's masterwork, Burnout, for the explanation, which is a book everyone should read. We exist in a system in which one class of people, the human givers, are expected to offer their time, attention, affection, and bodies willingly and placidly to this other group of people, the human doings. The implication in these terms is that human beings have a moral obligation to be or express their humanity, while human givers have the moral obligation to give their humanity to human beings. Givers are not supposed to need anything. If they dare ask for, or God forbid, demand anything, that's a violation of their role as a giver, and they may in fact be punished. And if a giver doesn't obediently and sweetly hand over whatever a being wants, the giver may be punished, shamed, or destroyed. Wow. Think about that. Punished, shamed, or destroyed. But Flame, you're saying, it's women who are being the assholes here. I know, chickens. And that's because the patriarchy and its accompanying misogyny is a hell of a drug that we have all internalized. We've internalized the idea that if we're not productive, we're less than. That if we're not taking care of someone or something, we failed. That if something brings us joy and offers no tangible purpose otherwise, then it's evil. This is also part of the puritanical foundations of America, specifically that we talked about in episode 3, but the exhaustion of misogyny is everywhere. It's the voice that tells you that writing fic is indulgent and therefore bad. Of course fandom is indulgent, but here's the rub, friends. Indulgence is a political act. Indulgence is eating the chocolate cake when society tells us that the low-fat diet wafers are what's supposed to be. Because here's a delightful secret. The pressure to be thin is also patriarchal. Diet culture was born in the Industrial Revolution when it became fashionable for middle-class men to have wives who were physically unable to work because it demonstrated the male's ability to earn a double wage. So eat the fucking cake, friends. Write the fic, draw the art, watch the porn, knit the doll, embrace the joy. For joy that is productive in this way, joy that is productive in just creating joy, is a political act. The age part of this comes in that we allow girls more indulgence than we do women. We allow frivolity in adolescence and university, but then the human giver syndrome takes over and we demand that women reduce themselves to giving. So women who don't want children, who don't want to give their wombs, wrongful, evil, shameful, useless. Women who don't want to sexually serve their spouse and instead claim their own orgasms, same. Women who want a career that doesn't involve nurturing, weird. Women who want a career full stop, political and breaking down the system. Women who don't stay in their lane, who claim their own joy, who say that they are worth things like rest and play and indulgence. Society sees them as a problem and they must be policed and punished. So there is only an age limit to fandom because the patriarchy demands that there be. You, my darlings, are human beings. You are not human givers, regardless of the externalized and internalized messengers saying otherwise. Fuck the patriarchy and embrace the joy.
On top of like the outside pressure being put on from an inside fandom perspective, it's also always super strange to me to see young people attacking the older people in fandom for still being there when the spaces that they inhabit, the events that they do, AO3 entirely and the OTW, and the vast majority of fan works that are considered most popular, highest quality, whatever you want to call it, are created by older women. Because the older that you get, because the vast majority of fandom is women, and the older you get, the more practice you have, the more experience you have, the more disposable income you have, and the ability to do things like run archives or build legal support systems for people who create fan works, or, you know, draw multi-page comics or write 100,000 words. Those are things we get better at as we get older. So, you know, if there was a cutoff, then a lot of the things that these young people are enjoying about fandom wouldn't be there at all.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because part of that is that often youth don't see adults as humans in and of themselves. Mm. So adults in, you know, for a lot of these, the way that these people behave, I want to say they're probably like 14, 15, 16 developmentally. Like that's just my guess.
Yeah.
And in that age bracket, you know, adults are not people. They exist entirely to make that person's life more comfortable. So right. They teach them or they feed them or, you know, that kind of stuff. And so it's a further dehumanization past what they already assume. And they want fandom to be, it's also like, this connects in my brain, but like, if you looked at some of these people and said that Chris Evans is 38, like they wouldn't know what to do with that.
Yeah. Like, I've got a better chance with him than you guys do.
Like, I'm really sorry. Like, we actually graduated high school pretty much the same year. And it's that kind of inability to understand complex and abstract thoughts too, that lead them to be like, okay, well, it's creepy for my mom to think about having sex. So therefore it's creepy for this woman who's my mom's age to write about sex.
Yeah. It's funny to me because recently, and this happens once in a while, I got an ask on my Tumblr about why the pot server is 18 plus. And there's been some drama around the exclusivity of 18 plus spaces in fandom in the past. So it's sort of funny to see one group of underage people being upset that adults are in fandom at all, and another group, I hope it's another group anyway, of underage people being upset that they're not allowed in the adult space yet. But I do think there's a squick factor for a lot of people thinking about anyone their parents' age, thinking about talking about having sex, and there's probably like a whole other societal thing we can go into with people's issues with sex. Maybe it doesn't really register for me because of the relationship I have with my mom. I mean, she's read my porn, so.
I mean, my mom and I have been trading Harlequin romances back and forth since I was 11.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and she would not read this simply because she doesn't, she vaguely understands who Captain America is. So, like, it's just not her bag. But she knows I write these fics. She always wants me to read y'all's comments that you say that are really nice. And like wants to know that I'm like, and then she'll look at me and cry and be like, you're making a difference in someone's life. I'm so proud of you. And it's very awesome. Precious. My mother is a saint on earth, who reads absolutely filthy romance novels. But like, I was also raised in multi-generational spaces because I was raised in church and I knew people. Like I was working in nursery and also helping like senior citizens go grocery shopping. Mm-hmm. And I kind of saw the whole life cycle constantly.
Yeah.
And if you are somebody who only exists in your generation and then your parents' generation, and there isn't in betweens, like if you're a 14-year-old who doesn't know any 25-year-olds or yeah. doesn't know any 35-year-olds, like the world looks different than it did to me growing up who knew people at all of those life stages.
I also think that some of this is a more, like it's similar to the redirected shame you just talked about from society, but there's like a redirected shame from internal to your family group as well. If Correct. Your parents are saying, you spend too much time on Twitter, you drawing stupid pictures of superheroes, why aren't you doing your homework? Fan fiction is dumb, you're, you know, lazy, why don't you write something real and get paid for it? You know, any of those things. Then that ends up part of how you see things, and you have this hope that you're going to grow out of it, or that this is just a kid thing, and adults don't feel the urge to do these things that are shameful and useless. But that when you're older, it's like that song from Frozen 2, everything makes sense when you're older.
Yeah.
And there's, yeah, when they see adults participating in these behaviors are like, oh shit, am I going to be doing this for the rest of my life? And I've been told that that's a bad thing. And it's not. It's not a bad thing, guys.
It's not. Like,
have your hobbies.
We do not, as a society, shame anyone who spends every single Sunday of NFL season for 15 hours tailgating and paints their bodies.
Yeah.
We don't shame people who participate in fantasy sports because those are male-coded activities that are, and therefore the patriarchy approves of them. But we certainly shame women who do fantasy football. Like really the core at the issue is that society is not comfortable with women having hobbies that don't involve gardening or knitting or things like that. And those hobbies are amazing. I kill things and can't knit. So like rock on.
I both garden and knit.
Yeah. And so that's not me saying that those aren't, those aren't political acts either. Anytime a woman claims rest and enjoyment for herself within a patriarchal system, it is a protest in a really, really specific way. And if you're listening to this and you're like, yeah, but Flame, I know all of this. So like misogyny maybe isn't that, like, I don't feel that way. I don't feel shamed and blah, 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 blah. Great job. You did this work already and you didn't even know it.
Yeah. And like, pass that on to your kids or the young people in your life. And it doesn't have to be, you know, if you make that a shameful process to pass that on, it doesn't get internalized the same way as lifting up the young women in your life who are doing these things and feeling uncertain if they should feel shame for them or not.
So like I said earlier, this is very much like I say eat the cake, by the way. I should say this because one of the most famous sociological experiments that happened kind of in the early aughts at the height of American diet culture was that they took people from 15 different countries around the world and they put a piece of chocolate cake in front of them and then cards of five different words And almost every country but America picked words that were like treat or sweet or indulgent or tasty. And Americans picked thing I can't have.
Right.
And so that's why I say always eat the cake. So whatever the equivalent of that is in your life, if that's take the longer bubble bath, if that's write the 100K fic, if that's print out your fanfic and take it on vacation, like all of us used to do, do it.
Getting your own fanfic printed into books and putting on your shelf because you accomplished something and you can stare at that if you want to.
I have a PhD bound on my shelf, and I will tell you right now that I am already looking forward to the day where I will bind and put my fanfic right next to it, because like my fanfic brought me a whole lot more joy than that fucking book did. So like that's valid. Your joy is valid. Your rest is valid, and you are enough and you deserve rest.
Well, Stackoni Summer Stocking has been cooking with gas, and we want to give you guys your bi-weekly update in our segment called Life of an Event. We're really excited by how it's going. We're down to only having 12 unclaimed stockings out of the 44. So that is going great. And fills are coming in.
Yeah, we've approved around a dozen at this point now, and they are all great. And really, I will commend everybody so far. The only things we had to go back to authors for was identifying information. Absolutely nobody violated any of the do not wants. They all created really exactly what the requester was asking for, which I'm not surprised about, because the fandom is generally, we generally try to make each other happy. But the identifying information thing is hard to remember, especially if you post a lot or you have a rhythm of posting.
Or like a template.
Yeah, like you always put the same thing in your end notes, or you always organize your fix this way. So I had to talk to a couple creators who were gracious and lovely about making that change. And that's been it so far. I've really enjoyed reading the fix so far, personally, I'll say, and I cannot wait for more to fill, just because I'm thirsty always for more Stockoni content.
Yeah, that's why we're doing it, right?
Yeah.
That does bring up a point, though. I think having to check for identifying information is probably something that people might not consider when they think about the kinds of things you have to check when you're doing approvals, just like how a fair number of people forget that they need to think about it when they post. Just to talk about what approving fix is like for something like this, there's actually several things you kind of have to keep in your mind at once as you're going through it, or you have to kind of do a checklist and go through bit by bit, because you have to keep a bunch of things in mind, like identifying information, was it gifted to the right person, and have they submitted it to the collection properly? And then, and identifying information can be lots of different things, like, is it in a personal collection? Did they link to their Tumblr? Did they put their name of their beta in it? That kind of thing. And then also making sure it doesn't contain any of the recipient's do not wants can be a little bit hard. You kind of have to keep both things open at the same time, because everybody has really different do not want lists, and there are some things that are commonly on many people's but then aren't on other people's, and then some people have ones that are fairly uncommon. So to try and keep it all in your head when you're going through multiple approvals can be really hard, and you can kind of mix up who things are for, and it can get easy to kind of worry that you're missing something, especially if the fix is really good and you get caught up in it.
Yeah, I have to keep both. Like, I literally just open two browsers and put them side by side on my screen. Uh-huh. And read through it. Now, all of our stockings are fairly short, which makes it a little bit easier. Doing approvals for longer fix is certainly more of a challenge for me.
Yeah.
I think that would be a challenge for everybody. But like my personal hardest thing I'll say to keep in mind is when somebody doesn't like something that's a character tick. So when one of the do not wants is Bucky calling people doll, for instance.
Right.
That's a really hard one to keep in mind. People who don't like it when Tony, there was an event I did once where someone didn't want Tony to refer to his bots as his kids.
Okay.
And like, that is not something I would even flag as a reader.
Right. You almost need to do sort of a control F after you read it once, just to check for a couple of keywords to see.
Yeah. Cause like, it was one of those, like, I just had to, every time he was in the workshop, I had to be like, and how is he talking to dummy? And like, which that's part of the responsibility of a mod. We're not complaining about this.
No. Like, everybody has their list and we ask for the list. But if you're thinking about running an event like this, approvals actually end up being sort of a focus intensive prospect in a way that maybe people wouldn't necessarily budget enough time or energy for.
And which is why it's completely valid. Like some of the other events I've run, and one I'm thinking about running around Christmas, will have no approvals whatsoever and will be a free for all.
Nice.
Because if I don't have the spoons or the focus, or especially if I want to run a multi-ship event, I don't want to have to approve things in a ship I don't read.
Right.
I don't want to have to limit that in that way. And so like the thing I'm potentially thinking of running at Christmas would be multi-ship, multi-fandom, multi-everything. And I just want to people to create as much content as possible that I don't have to deal with. For us in this event, because we wanted the surprise element and the stocking element.
And for it to be gifts to a particular person.
That's gifts to a particular person. Yeah, that's what I meant by the stocking element. Sorry. Because we wanted it to be specifically to a person that added this check process.
Yeah.
That we knew. And so we're being careful to do it as it goes along, because we're sure that a bunch of you are going to flood us on the very last day.
Yeah. And that's another thing to consider when you're planning out your event, when you're making your schedule, is how many people do you have available for approvals? How many pieces do you think you're going to get? And do you have time to handle a big rush at the end?
And we're aware, we realized it even after we did the schedule, that we didn't give ourselves a day between the last day of posting and reveals. And so if none of you speak to us on September 25th, it's because we are reading all of the delightful fills.
Mm-hmm. And if you're done your fill and it's ready to be posted before then, we would super duper appreciate it if you post it as soon as it's ready to go, so that we can stay ahead of the approvals and only have the stuff that's being finished at the last minute to approve at the last minute.
But speaking of filling, please write. We want to remind you, there's no minimum.
You can also art. Mood board, gift.
Lots of options there. And remember too, that many people can fill stockings. So even though there are some filled and some claimed and all of that kind of stuff, if you are inspired by something, chase it.
Go for it.
And we can't wait to see what you do.
Our last two grammar talks have been fairly broad concept and perhaps fairly challenging on a few fronts, so I'm going to focus on something more concrete and relatable today. Semicolons. There are three uses for semicolons, and only one of them is something you're likely to use when writing fan fiction, but seeing the other two could confuse the situation for you if you don't know why they're being used as they are. So I'm going to explain all three, and hopefully you'll feel more confident using them yourself, and you'll understand better how they're being used elsewhere. So the first one is in lists. You're not particularly likely to use the list construction like this in writing fanfic, but you may end up using it in other forms of writing you do, or sometimes it may come up in writing fiction. It's just not very common. So imagine a grocery list. Apples, pears, donuts, eggs. If we write it in point form, we'll use a list format with dots or lines to indicate each new item. But if the list is written out as a sentence, it'll be divided with commas. Apples, comma, pears, comma, donuts, comma, eggs. But what if we want to add more information about each item? Apples, gala, not Granny Smith. Pears, but only if you can get a big bag, not individually. Donuts, I want the jelly-filled kind, but you should also get some chocolate ones. Eggs, large, brown, and on sale. If we use commas for that whole thing, it looks like this. Apples, comma, gala, not Granny Smith, comma, pears, comma, but only if you can get a big bag, comma, not individually, comma, donuts, comma, I want the jelly-filled kind, comma, but you should also get some chocolate ones, comma, eggs, comma, large, comma, brown, comma, and on sale.
Nope.
It's hard to follow. And I realize it's silly out loud, but it's also hard to follow when you read it on the page. So we can replace the commas that divide into items and leave the commas that add additional information to make it more clear which information goes with which items and where the item divides are. Apples, comma, gala, not Granny Smith, semicolon. Pears, comma, but only if you can get a big bag, comma, not individually, semicolon. Donuts, comma, I want the jelly-filled kind, comma, but you should also get some chocolate ones, semicolon. Eggs, comma, large, comma, brown, comma, and on sale. Generally, it's not a great idea to use this construction in fiction because it suggests your list is too complicated to understand easily, and you might be better off rephrasing things. But as always, that's a stylistic choice, and you may even have an embedded list that is being read by someone in your story, something like that. So it's certainly better to use a semicolon than a comma in this situation. So if you're choosing to use a complicated list in your fiction, please definitely use a semicolon. It will be much easier for people to understand. And it's also fairly easy to interpret it, even if you don't know why a semicolon was used in that place. It still makes it visually easier for people to follow. So there's no need to use semicolons to divide things up if each item is individual and uncomplicated and has no internal commas. But anytime you have punctuation within any of the items of your list, I highly recommend it. To make it even more obvious, let's try another case that could be absolutely critical, and that's listing places. Philadelphia, comma, Pennsylvania, comma, London, comma, Ontario, comma, California, comma, Vancouver, comma, British Columbia, comma, Brazil. This list is hugely confusing. Is Ontario listed twice? Is it London, as in London, England, and then also Ontario, or London, Ontario? Those are very, very different places. But if we add semicolons, it's perfectly clear what we mean. Philadelphia, comma, Pennsylvania, semicolon. London, comma, Ontario, semicolon. Ontario, comma, California, semicolon. Yes, there is a place in California called Ontario. And yes, it's very annoying to be from Ontario, Canada, which is shortened to CA, and have there be an Ontario, California, which is also CA in a world where most things are very Americanized. Just throwing that out there. Vancouver, comma, British Columbia, semicolon, Brazil. So that's one of the ways that you can use semicolons. It obviously makes those lists much, much easier to understand. And if you're listening to this and that was too fast, our transcripts for Grammar Mustelid are always put in our show notes. So scroll all the way to the bottom and you can see exactly what I was saying out loud there if you found that a little hard to follow. So the second use of semicolons has fallen so far out of style that I'm tempted to call it old-fashioned. It's honestly still cited in most grammar lessons, but it's not generally taught in school. And the modern books that I've been reading don't edit for it, and it's not common at all in fan fiction. If it's still being taught to people being certified as editors, I wouldn't be hugely surprised, but it's definitely not commonly accepted. It's important to understand it, however, so if you see it, you know why, and also so you can use it if you wish. So this is the use of a semicolon before a conjunctive adverb. A conjunctive adverb is an adverb that joins ideas together but isn't given the same power to join independent clauses that a conjunction has. So remember we talked about conjunctions in parts of speech. That's words like but, and or. But I really am going to make the argument that conjunctive adverbs are full-on conjunctions these days because that's how we use them. So I think we can make a fair argument that this rule isn't true anymore, but I'm going to teach it anyway. So the way the sentence is constructed is two independent clauses that are joined by a conjunctive adverb, and the semicolon comes before the conjunctive adverb and a comma comes after. So example would be, Tony wouldn't stop teasing Bucky in class, semicolon, therefore, comma, Mr. Fury sent him to detention. Tony wouldn't stop teasing Bucky in class, therefore, Mr. Fury sent him to detention. These are two independent clauses. Tony wouldn't stop teasing Bucky in class is one. It has a subject and a verb. It's a full complete sentence. And the other is Mr. Fury sent him to detention. And they have been joined by the conjunctive adverb therefore. Since it's not considered a full conjunction, instead of connecting them with a comma, you would connect them with a semicolon. Some other examples of conjunctive adverbs are then, accordingly, furthermore, finally, before, now, however, instead, rather, indeed, of course, certainly, for example, also, and likewise. I see these constructions done with two commas these days, treating the conjunctive adverb as if it was a conjunction all the time. But if you want to use a semicolon here, you are perfectly technically correct. If you want an example of someone who loves this construction, look at L. Frank Baum. You can honestly just look up quotes from any of the Wizard of Oz books, and half of them seem to have this construction. He just loves it. So that can show you sort of how it's used in the wild. Again, I would just like to say, I'm teaching this to you so that you understand it. I certainly don't put a semicolon in those, and I love semicolons. So if this was confusing, or, you know, you're happy with the way that you construct your conjunctive adverb sentences already, by all means, go forth and however you want. Finally, we get to the construction with semicolons that you are most likely to use, and the one that is my favorite and that I like to use. Joining two independent clauses with no conjunction at all, whether they be conjunctive adverbs or not. So here's an example. Steve would make it on his own, semicolon. He always had. So why not use a comma? Because then we have a comma splice. We talked about this last time. If you stick together two independent clauses with not but a comma, you're forming a comma splice. And it's a common mistake, and it really stands out and makes the flow uncomfortable. I know I talk a lot about understanding the rules so you can break them. Comma splices is one of those ones that's fairly uncomfortable for people to read. So I would caution you about being really careful if you're going to break that rule. Sentence fragments, that's a popular one. You can definitely use that to effect. Comma splices, I'm not entirely sure what the effect would be that you're going for when you can use a semicolon. So if both parts of your sentence can stand grammatically on their own, that would be a comma splice if you used a comma. So why not use a period? Well, you totally can. But it does actually mean something slightly different. A semicolon gives the two clauses a stronger connection than a period. All your sentences have periods between them. With a period, you just have two sentences. But with a semicolon, you have sibling clauses, closer and related. So you're saying something. When I say Steve would make it on his own, period, he always had. It has a little bit of a different edge to it than Steve would make it on his own, semicolon, he always had. It's putting that he always had right inside the making it on his own, and it really connects those ideas for a reader. So why not use a conjunction? Well, again, you totally can, but it changes the flow just a little bit and ties the sentences together even more strongly than a semicolon, and also in a slightly different way. Steve would make it on his own because he always had. Steve would make it on his own and he always had. It's not quite the same. So it's definitely a stylistic choice, one that you can make between a semicolon, a period, and a conjunction. Entirely up to you. Whatever expresses what you're trying to express and whatever feels right for the thing that you're writing, they're absolutely all correct. Whereas the comma, we're gonna call technically, grammatically incorrect. So I hope this helps you understand and love the darling semicolon a little bit more. We have lists, we have conjunctive adverbs, and we have joining independent clauses. So maybe when you're editing, if you notice two sentences that are separated but have more poetic impact when they're joined together semantically, you might try throwing in a little semicolon there and see how it feels. Or maybe you like to write very complicated grocery lists for your honeydew and you want to experiment throwing some semicolons in there so they pick up the right kind of eggs. Go for it. As always, let me know if there's anything you want me to talk about on Grammar Mustelid. And next up, we have a final report from the Steve Tony Games.
Hello, fandom. I'm Kat. Before I continue, first I'd like to give the podcast a big thank you for giving us a space to talk about our event, the 2020 Steve Tony Games, which ended a few weeks ago on August the 27th. And what an event it was! It was down to the wire, but with 4,997 points, Team Fluff was a winner and they now have bragging rights for the next year. Team Angst was just 33 points behind, so the last few days were really exciting and nerve-wracking. We're still overwhelmed by the success of the event. We had 54 participants and 697 fills, including figs, art, playlists, potfigs, recklists, fanvids, mood boards, people even made sculptures and cakes. You can check all the fills out at our master spreadsheet, which will be linked in the show notes for this episode, but you can also find it on all our social media. There were 400 figs written for the games, for a total word count of 402,813 words. To give you an idea, that's the equivalent of not one, but two Crime and Punishments. So yeah, Dostoevsky eat your heart out. But artists also made their mark, with 58 pieces of fan art for Team Angst and 21 pieces of fan art for Team Fluff. We also included edits, and people loved the idea so much we had 54 angsty edits and 93 fluffy ones. We had 20 angsty potfigs and 7 fluffy ones for a total of 2 hours and a half. Next time you do laundry, you know what you can listen to. And once you run out of potfig, you can listen to our 17 playlists for Team Angst and 8 playlists for Team Fluff. Some people were brave and dared to vit. We had 2 wits for Team Angst and 1 for Team Fluff for a total of 7 minutes and a half. One of our goals was to show our love for this fandom and encourage everyone to share their appreciation for creators. Everybody contributes to our fandom, so we had 7 recklists full of angst and 9 recklists full of fluff. And then, when the games were over, we had a comment bingo, and wow, that was something else. 870 comments were made as part of the bingo. And the fills we got weren't just in English. We had fills in French, German, Spanish, Russian, and Persian. But not only do Steve Tony fans come from all over the world, we also show that Steve Tony love is all over the multiverse. Fills featured 93, with the MCU being the most popular one, followed by 616, Ultimates, and Avengers Assemble. The most popular fluffy universe was the MCU, followed by Domain 63 and Avengers Assemble. Our angst weasels focused on 616, Alts, and the MCU. And to absolutely nobody's surprise, they also beat Fluff in the Zumzumverse. And this is not all. We also have fills about that one universe where the Avengers have beards, and Noir, and EMH, and AVAC, and almost every universe you can think of. We're really happy of how the event turned out, and we want to thank everybody who participated and encouraged us. This is a new format and we're still working the kinks out, so if you participated, we ask that you fill out the feedback form that will also be linked in the show notes for this episode. Thank you so much again, and happy shipping!
Hi fandom! Only More Love here, back to tell you all about what's going on challenge-wise in a Marvel fandom near you. A little note before I start with the current events. You'll be able to find everything I mention in this forecast linked and explained in the show notes of each episode over on podonthesuit.com. Folks, here's some fandom fun to look forward to before it's time to go back to school and work. It's almost that time again. The creator signups for Marvel Trumps Hate will open on Sunday, September 13th, 12 a.m. Eastern Time. If you're a creator, please note that you can offer works such as fics, art, edits, videos, beta services, crafts, and more for any character, ship, or universe in the Marvel Multiverse. Signups will continue until Saturday, September 26th, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. The preview week will then run from October 11th to October 17th. During which time, potential bidders can peruse all the auctions and start building their list of fan works to bid on. And then, auction week will happen from October 18th to October 24th. As you get ready, you might want to look into the event's thorough FAQ page and reach out to the mods if you still have any remaining questions. You have a little under a week to September 5th. For submitting works to the Tiny Reverse Bang Amnesty Week. During this week, you may post any remaining works you started at any point and for any prompt of this year's Stony TRB. Show us the nice things you made before it's time for the final master post of this year's TRB. The September Tony Stark Flash Bingo cards have been released. Go grab one of the 9 and give us more of that sweet Tony content. As for the August round, each card has a series of 5 prompts on them, and you are welcome to slide an adopted prompt at either end of them too. And as per Tony Stark Bingo tradition, don't forget to claim your shiny badges for each of your achievements in the Flash rounds. Are you a Roman Rogers or Iron Widow shipper? If yes, you'll be interested to know. The Black Widow Bingo is back and open for signups until September 15th. Run and get yourself a card, friends. This round will be open until August 15th of next year, so there's plenty of time to create. The marvelously naughty Bang signups have opened. They will go on until October 10th for writers and November 14th for artists. Ready for some heat fic? Arranged bonding fic? Bonding marks art? We certainly are. Stocking stuffing is still going on for Flaret's Stucconi Summer Stockings. You have until September 25th to drop gifts in people's stockings, and the guidelines are very simple. Try to keep to a maximum of 1,000 words for fics or matching effort level for other media so the love gets spread as much as possible. For any additional questions you may have a look at Flaret's Guide to Filling a Stocking on Tumblr. Signups for the Stucky Bingo close tomorrow, August 31st. The round itself will go on until May 31st, 2021. With master posts expected June 6th, 2021. Please don't miss out. Just a friendly reminder that Soul Temper is back for another round to fill all your Darcy soulmate shipping needs in September. Go check out the prompt for this themed month on their blog. Also happening in September is the fabulous Sam Temper prompt event for all your Sam Wilson-centric fan work needs. Well, friends, that brings us to the end of your events forecast. Thanks so much for lending us your ears. Hope you'll join us again next episode. Until then, please stay safe and happy shipping.
And that's a wrap on episode 14. Thanks again to Tip Tack for the art and to Never Ever for the chat. And thank you to Magic Kaysen for writing and sharing Quit While You're Ahead, which will be linked in our show notes as always.
Don't forget to send us your fandom feelings about drama. And you may remember that we're leaving this ask open for a little while longer so that we can get a wide range. And also because, you know, we want as many stories about fandom drama as possible because we are shameless in that way. Mm-hmm. So send fair your suggestions for trope off. And remember too, that if you want to be our cover artist, we have a submission form where you can let us know that.
You can also join us in Discord for chats or for catch up club. Send us your tweets, comments, or Tumblr messages. And remember, this is your fandom podcast and we want it to be the best it can be for you. So get in touch and let us know how. As always, thank you to our amazing podcast staff for everything they do. And thank you for listening. And we'll see you in episode 15.
You've been listening to Pod on the Suit. Thanks for joining us.